Hello, everyone. So this is weirdly titled talk with a bit ambitious title about a side project of mine. I will explain a bit what this side project is about. It's two parts of the title, and explain what I plan to do with it later. I made a toy programming language for fun, like, yeah, it's not really original, but anyway. I was thinking of it for more than a year now, and I have a lot of ideas about stuff to experiment, and I start implementing a lot of part of it, but at the end, I had no programming language at all. So I decided somehow to send a FOSDEM talk and to try to do a programming language usable by people, and so here I am, and I publish online a version where I have a domain name, incredible, and so this is something I try to write so a few past months that is mostly usable, and I can explain why. So the idea is I made a really small programming language. And by small, I hope it's easy to learn. That helps you to catch a lot of bugs at build time, what most of programming languages try to do. And I make it kind of looks like JavaScript and and target JavaScript, because it's more easy to target JavaScript when you do a programming language that targets something else. So that's one of the motivation of it. Maybe you know that JS is not the perfect programming language. They have a lot of flaw. There is one I really hate, which is shadowcfp by default, which is you pass something to some place of your program and it's changed behind your back, and you don't realize only really after about what's really happened, and that's really painful. There is really weird behavior with every operator that everyone know and joke about. It's not really a big issue, but still annoying when you try to use it and discover it at the last moment. And there is most painful things about, there is a lot of things that should fail that does not really fail and rather return undefined, and you discover it really later in your program. And there is the thing that's, there is a lot of work on JavaScript to make it a better language, but the problem is you still want JavaScript to work with older JavaScript code, so there is a lot of duplication in the language, like the same things two times, but not exactly the same thing, because we try to fix weird behavior, so this is really confusing, I believe. And I think JavaScript is actually a good language to have another language transpile or compile to, because it can work anywhere. It's actually quite fast, because there is a lot of engineer that worked into making JavaScript fast, and that's true. JavaScript is run quite fast on a lot of platform, and still there are alternative runtimes that help you to make JavaScript easily embeddable in other program or use it for other usage on the web. And there is that thing that everyone knows about, maybe, which is WebAssembly, which is the thing that your language should target if you want to go on the web and don't want to write JavaScript. And it's cool, it's fast, it's also cross-platform. It's even now has the fact that you don't really have to manage your memory by hand in WebAssembly, because there are no GCs that let you say, okay, I create object and let's manage the memory like you will do in JavaScript. So it's really nice to have a language that built to WebAssembly, but there is still few reasons to prefer to target JavaScript than WebAssembly. The one is WebAssembly doesn't work on older browser. It's really nice to have a language when you can do all the hack of the earth, because it's really expressive, and you and try to do a toy project programming language. It's really nice to have all this expressive power. You can make it more easy to work with any existing API or JavaScript code, which is something which is really painful to do in WebAssembly. If you already try WebAssembly, you be aware that it's really hard to interoperate WebAssembly code with any other API because you have to do JavaScript glue code, and this glue code is not really safe. It's really hard to maintain and this kind of stuff. Having a target language that is familiar and hackable, and when you can run it into a step-by-step debugger, help you find bugs in your compiler, or I mean mine toy project. And also, you can turn JavaScript to C with something which is called QuickJS, which is actually really cool. And so, if you have JavaScript, you can have native target for free, native backend for free. So, maybe you are aware there is a lot of languages that already try to target JavaScript. There's a few of them named here. The one in bold are actually functional language, and the one in italic are the ones that try to kind of look like JavaScript. And the only one in the list that is really used by a lot of people is TypeScript, because that's the one language that accepts the idea that most of people want to write JavaScript or keep using, working on JavaScript code base. So I don't know a lot of people that's doing PerlScript, for example, that look like Haskell, or Elm that look like to Haskell 2 and that don't look like at all like JavaScript. What does that mean to make something smaller than JavaScript? It means that I have, for example, one kind of function, which all functions are lambda, anonymous function, the arrow function. I have one kind of string literal, not three, and that one support string interpolation like you do in JavaScript, but all the strings support it, so it's more easy. So all these kind of detail, like you just take the minimum amount of feature you can implement and try to make a smaller JavaScript. And there is kind of the thing that normally have rather functional language, but I kind of implement, which is everything return a value. So every expression, you can put it into another expression because everything should return a value. So for example, I can assign the result of an if-else branching because the value of an if-else branching is the branch that was executed. So you can just say that, which makes sometimes the code more compact and easy, and something you can't do easily in JavaScript because you have to define variable with the default value, reassign the variable in the branch and this kind of stuff, which is painful. And I don't have an undefined, I just have an empty object, which is the empty value. Like when you do something that does not return a value, it returns an empty value, which is the empty object or record anyway. I have some integration to make it easy to embed into JavaScript, and the thing since every file is kind of an expression and every expression is a value, every expression is converted to the equivalent JavaScript value, so every expression could be compiled and used in JavaScript. For example, I have a function which is compiled to the equivalent JavaScript function and does the equivalent things you would expect the function to do. And it's kind of expected. And I want to speak a bit about something that often when you use a lot of programming language, we start to feel like a lot of behavior are normal and logical. But if we really think about it, those behavior are not logical at all. And for example, there are so many different scope rules in JavaScript and many languages that does, at some point, there's too many scope rules. It's really counterintuitive. For example, this is legal in JavaScript. You can use a function which is declared later in your program because functions are top-level things that can be used anywhere in your program. So order don't count. But if you do a lambda, if you do an anonymous function, it's block scope, so you can't use something before it's defined. It's logical, it's not the same mechanism, but still we are two mechanisms. It's a bit counterintuitive. And if we are in the object declaration, of course you can't use an item of an object within an object because you have to wait for the object to be created fully. and you can't call the object within the object because you have to wait the object to be declared. You can do that. It's obviously is legal. It seems logical. But if we look at function, we can use function inside function, of course, and we can even use value that are declared after function, even if function capture the definition site, because that's a semantic of JavaScript. Because JavaScript, we have hoisting, which is function are actually declared in the top of your block, but only assigned later. So, and it's also true for const and let keywords. So this code will actually work and display a lot of emoji and at some point do a Stack Overflow, of course. But this is really counterintuitive that you can access a variable here, define here, it's working function. So a lot of different variables. So I come with the idea of doing something really more simple, which is let's merge the two concepts of object and block. And say just one thing, which is a block could have side effect. A block could have value redefined, but a block will return the object of the element within it. So we just have one kind of bracket that do the two things in one and have one scope rule, which is always the same, and you don't have to remind four, five scoping different scoping rules. There is that rule that works for everything, and smaller language. Like you just have one block to have instruction, and that is also the way to define objects. So that kind of one main idea. And the other idea, it's B is pure. And pure, it's a word that is so much used for saying so many different things that I will a bit explain what I mean by that in this context of this talk. I mean that when you define a variable and call something else, you expect the variable to not have changed because you expect not to have shared mutability. Like you don't expect a function that implicitly change a value of your program. What you expect is to have kind of a guarantee, for example, I have write it in B, of having whatever you do with the value won't change. And this kind of invariant, this kind of things you know you will always have, it's really cool because it allows a lot of stuff I will show later in the presentation. But kind of nice to know that, to know to whatever I do, if I don't reassign X explicitly, it could not be reassigned by another part of the program. I can't do that. If I want to reassign X, I have to return it as a return value of a function. The only way to reassign it is to have it at return value, not to pass it as implicitly like that. I have a kind of immutability by default. So immutability kind of says that when you define a value, it keeps that value forever, but you can redefine value, which works a bit like mutation and actually is implemented like mutation. You can redefine things. And if you redefine something in a different scope, it don't touch to the thing in the upper scope. So if you redefine a value in subscope and later call to the value, it's a previous value because you want the modification to be local, to don't propagate. And that this idea of scoping, which is always the same, that's applied everywhere, which is maybe a bit weird, but actually really handy. And so the interesting part is about how having a more constrained language allows the ability to spot more bugs. And I speak a bit about the fact that TypeScript sadly have exactly the same flaws as JavaScript because it's a superset. So for example, shared mutability forbid to have correct inference and correct typing. Here I have an example of bad inference in TypeScript, which is it's borrowed from the TypeScript tutorial. I should have TypeScript understandings that if I want something which is left of right and I assign a variable right, I should have the right thing. But the thing is TypeScript decide to infer S as a string and not as a left or right. And Why TypeScript does that? Because here we have a let s equal right and not a const s equal right. If you change the let by the const, TypeScript will correctly infer. But since there's shared mutability everywhere, TypeScript can't really know or assume that the value of s will not be changed. So it just say, okay, it will be a string. Even if you don't change it, if you use it right after, say it's a string because it's mutable, it can change, so you don't know. And it's done that. So that's kind of situation where the TypeScript inference failed, and if you have immutability, you don't have this kind of error, of course. And there is also bad typing. This code is a bit nasty, but the idea, if you expect something which is a string or a number, and then you check it's a string, and then you kind of calling something that changing the value behind the back of TypeScript, and TypeScript can detect that, because TypeScript just choose to don't keep track of that and assume you don't do it, even if you can do it. So this code will compile. It will check with TypeScript strict. TypeScript strict is hard to say. Will say there is no error, everything is fine. But if you run it, of course, at runtime, you say that two uppercase is not a function. Which is annoying. I would expect TypeScript to catch it. But in a way, I know TypeScript can't catch it because, yeah, it's really hard to keep track of every value, and type system can't do that easily. So the question is now, oh, I expect types to work in my minimal programming language I've not finished yet. There is an idea that comes from mostly really mathematical language, which is called dependent type language, which is the idea that types could be value that could be used like a value you can assign. Like, for example, here I just say types kind of a function that just say if something is true or false, and if it's true, it's type, and if it's false, it don't type. It's really natural to understand. But then I could use this in my code in to prefix value and say, okay, let's check if it's work and everything. And this is a really expressive way to say that something is a type, because every function could be a type as soon as the function return true or false, a Boolean value. Since there are function can be composed, so you can, for example, do structural typing. You can, for example, do union types, the things you have in TypeScript. You can do insertion type. It's just a way to say, is it a thing and a thing and a thing, or a thing, either a thing, either a thing, and just comparing value. It's not that hard, but the thing is, you want to run all that computation at real time, not at runtime. So you kind of, or you will succeed to do that. What typically TypeScript can do. And the thing is, it's more easy because, as we see before, the execution flow of the language is more predictable. There's no shared mutability. You don't know if a value can be changed by something else. And there is a technique that's come from static analysis, which is a technique which is mostly used to prove that a language that don't behave correctly still behave correctly. That's a technique, for example, used to prove that a C program works as expected, and in a C program you can do whatever you want. So you kind of need a powerful technique. So the idea of this technique is typing a program, checking a program. The build time check is really like running your program. You run your program and you check if it fails or if it works. But running a program does not scale, because if your program has an infinite loop, your check at build time will be infinite, or if you do an infinite recursion. So you have to change a bit the behavior of your program. You have to change a bit of if-else work, of function call work, and you have to change a bit the standard library to not do print, not write file, not read file. And the idea, if you change a bit things, to be fully determinist. For example, random function, rather than returning a random number, return the range of possible numbers. So you know your number will be between 0 and 5 because it's expected to be between 0 and 5, but you don't know what value. you change value by kind of the what would be the expected value in this case. This is really simple and powerful technique, but that does not really scale well, because if you have a really big program, you're kind of running a really big program at real time, which is problematic, and there is a solution to that later in this presentation. And I have a little demo of this working. So here I have four files, but only two of interest. I have something in TypeScript, which is I have an array of four elements. I pop an element and try to access the previous last element, and obviously it failed. And I have the same thing in B that look kind of similar. Actually, parentheses are optional here, but I put them because it's more looking like JavaScript. So two code do the same thing. So if I do it in TypeScript, take a while. It's a really small file, but still TypeScript. Yeah, cool. I have an old computer for TypeScript defense. And it compiled, no issue, everything fine. And if I run it, obviously, I got undefined, which is not what I expect here. But if I do it with my super cool side project, Toy Compiler, I have a really nice error that tell me a lot about what is happening here. That tell me what's the static value of the array, what's happening, where, how. Yeah, and I work mostly on that, on having kind of user-friendly error and tries next to make the thing scale well and have more expressivity to explain type. So that's the idea. I'm near the end of the talk. So I implement a lot of things, like really funny scoping bugs. I use Tricitor for my grammar, which is what use GitHub for syntax creation and analysis of everything on GitHub. I have all the things we have in JavaScript, like the spread operator, destructuring. I have things that does not exist in JavaScript, like implicit function argument, hyperarray overloading. And I have a small standard library where with everything you can expect to write a program. And I have also a CLI that I just demonstrate that work without Node in your class. You don't even need to have JavaScript installed on your computer to make it work. I have build targets so you can customize your JavaScript with different compile time variable. And you can even user define. I have a build cache so when you do, it's not a good example because the compilation failed anyway. But if your compilation succeed, if you run it several times, you just compile only the file that changed, not the new one. I have syntax highlighting, not the best, but still. And I have a lot of things left to do. I don't have yet pattern matching. I would like to have it for the presentation, but I still don't have it, so I try to do it soon, because it's really nice to kind of destructure things in function parameter or there's a case where my language looks really too functional, like you don't really, can't really do while loops. You can have for each, but you can't have while, and because you need kind of mutability to be able to say, okay, do that until that thing is no longer valid. And and I'm kind of thinking about having a bit of mutability constraint because it solves this problem. And there is subtyping because actually with types, as I show them, I cannot say that a type is of another type. And it's not that hard to do, but I didn't did it yet because I have keep track of all the type declarer and can explain that later if there is question about it. And there is a lot of things to do, and it's a site, it's a part-time project, but maybe one day it will no longer be a part-time project. It's really nice to have a language server protocol. Maybe you're aware of that. Debug adapter protocol too. It's kind of the language was designed in the first place to not compile to JavaScript, but to compile to kind of. I made a README. You can try it if you want. And that's basically the end of my talk. Thank you. So the question was, what's the programming language paradigm I use as inspiration? Was it just JavaScript or something else, for example, Rust or functional programming? And the answer is, I work for an Haskell company, so I am really a functional programmer. Indeed, and before I was working with Rust, and I really love Rust, but I kind of feeling that Rust is not a language for anyone, because Rust ergonomic make it sometimes really painful to use for writing like most of the programming task you want to write in your daily programmer life. So my first motivation was to try modestly. To do a better Rust, like a Rust, but that's with maybe more simple rules and more easy to use, but still the same kind of guarantee. But it's still the idea a bit behind this project. But like what I said in the beginning of the talk, I try to make something small and hackable on which I can really experiment if my semantic work in my syntax is unambiguous, this kind of stuff. And it's more easy to have something small that work on which you can experiment and see if it's usable rather than the bigger goal I had in the beginning, which was more inspired by Rust or functional programming overall. Yeah. Thanks for the question.
Big round of applause for Ivan. So one of the next